Hi, Dave Emmer here. This is Side 1, for the record, program number 771. The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, Part 13, Beware of Libertarians Bearing Gifts, subtitled The 1934 Coup Attempt Redux. This program is being recorded on February 2nd of the year 2014. We're going to plunge right back in to our ongoing analysis of Edward Snowden and the intelligence operation for which he is the lead man, so to speak, the point element, the public element. I have spoken of Snowden, again, Eddie the Friendly Spook, or as we will see, the Peach Fuzz Fascist, as I have termed him. He is the point element of a very obvious intelligence operation, an underground Reich operation, the goals of which are, among other things, A, and primarily, the destabilization of the Obama administration. It also is targeting American internet business. It also is destabilizing the National Security Agency and the GCHQ, British Intelligence Agency. It also, as we are going to see today, is laying the groundwork for what may very well be a rollback of the New Deal itself and possibly even the breakup of the United States. In the later discussion, we're also going to discuss this same underground Reich milieu as assailing U.S. recording and movie business as well. I believe that a very serious program of economic warfare is being waged by the underground Reich against the United States. Now, front and center to the intelligence operation of which Eddie the Friendly Spook is the point element, the public element, is something I have spoken about many times, and that is a passage from Mein Kampf, Hitler's personal political manifesto and autobiography. At one point, Hitler wrote, "Most people tell little lies. They would be ashamed to tell big ones. They would never credit others with such great impudence as the complete reversal of facts. Even explanations would long lead them in doubt and hesitation, as any trifling detail would dispose them to accept a thing as true. All good liars know this, therefore, and stop at nothing to achieve this end." In that regard, I would also, in that same context, I would also cite the dynamic that I use, which is the dynamic of information versus confirmation. What I am doing on this program and on my website at spitfirelist.com is giving information, disseminating as much information as I possibly can. I think a great many people, I'm tempted to say, most people, I'm actually tempted to say the vast majority of people are inclined to seek confirmation rather than information. They are seeking confirmation of their beliefs, their hopes, their fears, their prejudices. Human beings, I think, are hardwired in that regard. They want to feel like they are part of a community. They want to feel like they are part of a tribe. And so an awful lot of people will reject information when it is in conflict with the confirmation that they are seeking. There also is, in that very same context, something very profound. I have encountered no more profound political dictum in my, well, I'm now in my 35th year on the air. This was written by the brilliant political comedian Mort Saul in his autobiography, Homeland. Mort Saul, by the way, was one of Jim Garrison's investigators when the New Orleans District Attorney investigated the assassination of JFK. Mort Saul is also one of the one of my role models, one of the people who inspired me to do what I do. In Homeland, Mort Saul wrote that, quote, "How many lies can you allow yourself to believe before you belong to the lie. Indeed. And I think as people contemplate what Hitler said, most people tell little lies. They would be ashamed to tell big ones. They would never credit others with such great impudence as the complete reversal of facts. And also, when I talk about information versus confirmation, we may want to ask ourselves, and you as individuals in the audience may want to ask yourselves, do you belong to the lie? Have you listened to so much BS about Edward Snowden and what a hero he is, and about the inextricably linked WikiLeaks network, about which we will have more to say later, and about what heroes they are? That is all a lie, although I do not question the sincerity of many of the people who have championed Snowden, who have championed WikiLeaks. They, I think, fall into the category of people who are seeking confirmation rather than information, and people who, through no fault necessarily of their own, belong to the lie, as Mort Saul said. By the way, younger listeners, if you think that Jon Stewart and what's-his-name who follows him on television, if you think they are funny, you should pay attention to Mort Saul, a brilliant political comedian who is a whole lot funnier than they are put together. Okay, just a parenthetical element. Now, what we're going to take a look at to begin with is the reality, not only of Edward Snowden, but also of the leaking journalist of choice, Citizen Greenwald, as I call him, Glenn Greenwald. I guess you could call a couple of the items we're going to be looking at here Edward Snowden Unplugged and Glenn Greenwald Unplugged as well. In the past, we have spoken about Edward Snowden's ultra-reactionary views, including his desire to return to the gold standard, something that would destroy the global economy if it were ever implemented, and also his desire to get rid of Social Security. Edward Snowden is an extreme right-winger. He is a devotee of Ron Paul and the economic philosophy of the Ludwig von Mises Institute, as I discussed in For the Record 756. Ron Paul's chief legal advisor for his 2012 campaign, Bruce Fein, is Snowden's American attorney and formed a nonprofit with Snowden's father, Lon Snowden, that's L-O-N. And in addition, it looks like Rand Paul, Ron Paul's son, put Fein in touch with the Snowden family. As we will see later, the WikiLeaks operation is inextricably linked with the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, the Peach Fuzz Fascist, and Julian Assange is a big fan of Ron and Rand Paul as well. As we're going to see, Citizen Greenwald also has looked upon and spoken about Ron Paul with favor, although he has qualified that somewhat. He has given some lip service, at least, to the stunning views of Ron Paul, but nonetheless, he has been generally favorable as well. A very important article that is excerpted in this program and that I is linked in the description for the Record Program 771 when it gets published, which it will shortly. It's called Would You Feel Differently About Snowden, Greenwald, and Assange If You Knew What They Really Thought? It's by Sean Willens. I'm not sure how his name is pronounced. W-I-L as in Larry, E-N-T-Z as in zebra. This was published in the New Republic of January 19th of 2014. Now, in the For the Record programs 756 and 757, I have spoken about the fact that Edward Snowden, when he was posted to Geneva, Switzerland in 2009 as an officer of the Central Intelligence Agency, which he was at that time, later moved to NSA, and Booz Allen Hamilton, Snowden went online and articulated his ultra-right-wing views. Some of that is excerpted here in the Sean Willens article. At the time the stimulus bill was being debated, Snowden also condemned Obama's economic policies as part of a deliberate scheme, quote, to devalue the currency absolutely as fast as theoretically possible, unquote. The social dislocations of the financial collapse bothered Snowden not at all. Quote, Almost everyone was self-employed prior to 1900, he asserted. By the way, he also was wrong. Again, quoting, "Why is 12% unemployment so terrifying?" Unquote. In another chat room exchange, Snowden debated the merits of Social Security. Now, in this chat room exchange, Snowden is posting under the moniker of The True Hoo-Ha, H-O-O-H-A, all in capitals. Snowden writes, "Save money, cut this Social Security bull S blank blank blank." And still more here, skipping down. "Somehow, our society managed to make it hundreds of years without Social Security just fine. Magically, the world changed after the New Deal, and the old people became made of glass." Notice that, in effect here, what Snowden is doing is attacking the New Deal. And still later in the same session, and I'm going to have to attenuate this slightly because Snowden makes liberal use of the present participle conjugation of the F word, so I'm going to have to attenuate this. Later in the same session, Snowden wrote that the elderly, quote, "wouldn't be effing helpless if you weren't sending them effing checks to sit on their A blank blank and lay in hospitals all day." Once again, this is Eddie Snowden unplugged. Snowden wrote that the elderly, quote, "wouldn't be effing helpless if you weren't sending them effing checks to sit on their A blank blank and lay in hospitals all day," unquote. Yeah, that's it, Eddie, you know, just stop sending those old folks those checks and get those 75 and 80-year-olds up out of their hospital beds so they can get out and get a job like everybody else, huh? The point is, this is, it's like that old quiz show. Will the real Eddie Snowden please stand up? Snowden is a spy, and spy rhymes with lie. This, however, is the real Eddie Snowden. This is Edward Snowden unplugged. This is Eddie the friendly spook behind the mask. This is the peach fuzz fascist incarnate, and he is exactly that. More about Citizen Greenwald from that same article. This again, the article, "Would you feel differently about Snowden, Greenwald, and Assange if you knew what they really thought?" by Sean Willens, New Republic, January 19th of 2014. Greenwald also has looked with favor upon Ron Paul. Greenwald has identified a vehicle for a political realignment: the presidential candidacy of the old libertarian warhorse, Ron Paul. And in November 2007, Greenwald called Paul as vigilant a defender of America's constitutional freedoms as any figure in some time, unquote. And again, he gave some lip service to Ron Paul's remarkable views that Lincoln shouldn't have. But he didn't really talk about them, but did acknowledge some right-wing stances, such as Ron Paul's statements in his newsletters that Lincoln shouldn't have freed the slaves, that the Confederacy was right in the Civil War. And continuing, "still, he believed Paul to be a rare truth-teller, prepared to buck a corrupt bipartisan consensus," Willens goes on to write. "This portrayal required highly selective political reasoning, not to mention a basic ignorance of U.S. history. Ron Paul, a longtime supporter of the John Birch Society, is a quintessential paleoconservative holding prejudices and instincts that predate the post-World War II conservative movement founded by William F. Buckley, Jr. and others. Paleoconservatives, in their hatred of centralized government and consequent isolationism, regard U.S. history as a long series of catastrophes, starting with the defeat of the Confederacy." And we're going to be coming back to the neo-Confederate movement, the League of the South, again, inextricably linked with the Ron Paul, Rand Paul milieu. And again, Eddie Snowden has the views of the Ludwig von Mises Institute and Ron Paul, and we're going to come back to that later. Just as we were talking about Edward Snowden unplugged, in this one, I think we can talk about Glenn Greenwald unplugged as well. We have discussed Glenn Greenwald's legal work in the past in For the Record 754, in which Greenwald spent years running legal interference for Nazi murderers and did most of that work pro bono. He was running legal interference for the leaderless resistant strategy. And one of his legal victories involved aiding two white supremacists who had attacked two Latino day laborers. After they survived those attacks, they filed a civil suit against a number of organizations, including the National Alliance, because they charged them with inciting this kind of behavior. I think that is more than a little interesting because Citizen Greenwald, in some of his more candid moments, has had some very interesting things to say about, quote, illegal immigrants, unquote. From the same story, would you feel differently about Snowden, Greenwald, and Assange if you knew what they really thought, unquote, by Sean Wilentz of The New Republic, January 19th, 2014. An excerpt reads as follows. And again, we're going to see Glenn Greenwald, Citizen Greenwald, unplugged as well. Greenwald's other clients included the neo-Nazi National Alliance, who were implicated in an especially horrible crime. Two white supremacists on Long Island had picked up a pair of unsuspecting Mexican day laborers, lured them into an abandoned warehouse, and then clubbed them with a crowbar and stabbed them repeatedly. The day laborers managed to escape. When they recovered from their injuries, they sued the National Alliance and other hate groups, alleging that they had inspired the attackers. And then he goes on, Sean Wilentz goes on to write. On certain issues, though, his, Greenwald's prose was suffused with right-wing conceit and catchphrases. One example was immigration, on which Greenwald then, 2005, held surprisingly hard-line views. Quote, "The parade of evils caused by illegal immigration is widely known," Greenwald wrote in 2005. The facts, to him, were indisputable. Quote, "Illegal immigration wreaks havoc economically, socially, and culturally, makes a mockery of the rule of law, and is disgraceful just on basic fairness grounds alone," unquote. Defending the nativist Congressman Tom Tancredo from charges of racism, Greenwald wrote of, quote, "unmanageably endless hordes of people who pour over the border in numbers far too large to assimilate, and who consequently have no need, motivation, or ability to assimilate," unquote. These hordes, Greenwald wrote, posed a threat to, quote, "middle-class suburban voters," unquote. Isn't that nice, people? That's Glenn Greenwald unplugged. Citizen Greenwald unplugged. Now, Greenwald did later give he retracted those remarks in print, by the way, those remarks were made. This wasn't like he was, you know, had too many cups of coffee or too many drinks at a soiree and was running off at the mouth. That was in print. And Greenwald gave a very unconvincing explanation for those remarks. Note that he has spoken in defense of Tom Tancredo, last name T as in Thomas, A-N-C as in cat, R-E-D-O as in owl. Something about Tom Tancredo. First of all, he is an associate of the Tea Party, and as we will see, he also has been very chummy with the milieu that, again, includes people like interests like the League of the South, neo-secessionists, and Don Black, a former Ku Klux Klansman and the founder of the Stormfront website. That is someone with whom Ron Paul, Eddie Snowden's presidential candidate of choice, and the milieu of which Edward Snowden is inextricably linked, Don Black, has been networking with Ron Paul for decades, okay? First of all, from the Imagine 2050 blog site of February 5th of 2010 about Tom Tancredo, Tancredo kicks off Tea Party convention with racist comments, reads in part, "Tancredo stood smiling at the crowd and waving before starting off his speech with, "I'm Tom Tancredo and I drive a Harley." He quickly moved on from the topic of motorcycles, however, to get to his main target, immigrants, unquote. He stated that many of the people who voted Obama into office, quote, can't even spell the word vote or even speak English, unquote. And again, Tom Tancredo is one of the people that Citizen Greenwald, on whose behalf Citizen Greenwald wrote. More about Tom Tancredo and his political milieu. This is from the Hate Watch newsletter of the Southern Poverty Law Center of June 19th of 2012. This is an article by Ryan Lenz, L-E-N-Z, titled "Former Congressman Tancredo to Address White Supremacists." And this is about an address that Tancredo was scheduled to give to the White Supremacist Council of Conservative Citizens. Eventually, he wound up withdrawing. However, he was the scheduled speaker for this event. And Sean Wilentz writes, "Sharing the dais with Tancredo will be a rogues gallery of the racist right, including James Edwards, who hosts the nationalist political cesspool radio show, Don Black, the former Klansman best known for creating Stormfront.org, the first major internet hate site, and Leonard Wilson, W-I-L-S-O-N, a longtime segregationist and Alabama commander for the Sons of Confederate Veterans, a neo-Confederate group that, like Tancredo, staunchly opposes immigration." And skipping down again, "Tancredo was already honorary chairman of Youth for Western Civilization, or YWC, an ultra-conservative student group that has actively cultivated relationships with white nationalist organizations such as the Racist League of the South, or LOS, whose leader Michael Hill recently penned an essay describing how white people are endowed with a God-ordained superiority," unquote, and professing that it was a monumental lie, unquote, that all men are created equal. In 2006, Tancredo delivered an anti-immigrant speech and sang Dixie at the barbecue advertised by the South Carolina chapter of the League of the South. By the way, Jack Hunter, a former chairman of the League of the South, was Ron Paul's blogger during the 2012 campaign, is now an aide to Rand Paul. And it was Rand Paul who put Bruce Fein, Ron Paul's top legal advisor for his 2012 campaign, into touch with the Snowden family, where he became Eddie the Friendly Spook's American attorney and also founded a nonprofit organization with Eddie Snowden's father, Lon Snowden. For the duration of this side and going into next, the next side of this broadcast, we are going to be taking a look at a very, very important article that really goes to the thrust of what I think lies at the foundation from a domestic civil standpoint for the Snowden operation and a spook operation. It quite obviously is. This is an article called "Beware of Libertarians Bearing Gifts: Why a Bipartisan Move Against the NSA Could Kill the New Deal." It's by Zach Beauchamp, B-E-A-U-C as in cat, H-A-M-P as in Paul, and Ian Millhiser, I-A-N, last name M-I-L-L-H-I-S as in Sam, E-R. This is from the Think Progress, the blog of January 24th of 2014. Now, what the authors are writing about here is a right-wing movement that is gathering steam and has introduced legislation in six different states, basically to cut off water and electricity to National Security Agency facilities because of the data hoovering operation, H-O-O-V-E-R, data gathering operations of NSA. And I think in many ways this goes to the one of the major thrusts of the PSYOP, which the peach fuzz fascist, Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, is fronting. And we're going to come back to this, but as the authors of the story note, the bill, the legislation introduced in 6 states, the bill is rooted in a theory that, in James Madison's words, would, quote, speedily put an end to the Union itself, unquote. More immediately, it could empower conservative state lawmakers to cut off Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security, parenthetically, that would be much to the liking of Eddie the Friendly Spook, beginning again. More immediately, it could empower conservative state lawmakers to cut off Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security to frustrate civil rights enforcement or even to prevent federal law enforcement from investigating criminals, unquote. And the legislation has been basically initiated by a group that we're going to be looking at called the 10th Amendment Center. The legislation, again quoting from this article, the legislation poses a serious threat to that liberal touchstone, a federal regulatory and welfare state equal to the problems of growing corporate power and poverty. In our next installment of Eddie the Friendly Spook, we're going to be taking a look at the private versus public dynamic and the whole issue of corporatism and corporate intrusions into personal privacy and corporate violations of civil liberties, something you never hear about in this entire discussion. When Mussolini, who coined the term fascism, coined it, he didn't say, well, fascism is when the NSA is gathering up all your phone calls and your emails. No, il duce. Mussolini said, il fascismo e il corporatismo. Fascism is corporatism. And what we are looking at here with the milieu of Eddie the Friendly Spook goes right to the core of that very consideration. Again, the articles of the story, Beware of Libertarians Bearing Gifts, Why a Bipartisan Move Against the NSA Could Kill the New Deal, by Zach Beecham, B-E-A-U-C-H-A-M-P, and Ian Milheiser from Think Progress, of January 24th, 2014. We're going to plunge into this article in the other side of our program. I can't stress strongly enough that listeners use the SpitfireList.com website. Again, SpitfireList.com. I've got all of my entire life's work up there for download for free, as well as a library of old anti-fascist books. There is a brilliant contributing editor who posts under the name of Terra Fractal. That's P-T as in Tom, E-R-R-A-F-R-A-C-T-Y-L, who is just brilliant and also very skilled in matters financial and business and has been a major contributor to the site. There is also a long series of video lectures about the relationship between fascism and religion. I've been on the air, I'm in my 35th year on the air. That's a time period that roughly stretches from the stock market collapse of 1929 to when the Beatles came to America. That's a long time. And all of that work is up on the SpitfireList.com, available for download for free. And if you listen to the program on the radio, you can also get, or if you visit the website, there is a flash drive available with all of the information on the Spitfire List website available. That concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 771, The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, Part 13, Beware of Libertarians Bearing Gifts, subtitled The 1934 Coup Attempt Redux. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.